Can you make this quick? I got a meeting.
Oh, well, no, of sorry. Course. Let's not leave
That's
our
not
man.
That's not Terry.
Let's, what?
Not Terry. Don't Terry.
Harry?
Yeah, like Terry. Like, don't wait around. Let's roll.
You using that correctly?
Please stop.
I think so.
Okay. Joel Klatt, presented by Audi Flatirons. He joins us now. Good morning, Joel.
What's going on?
Hey, Joel, doing, guys? I make up a lot of words on this show. It's just
Listen,
what I do.
You know what? You know, listen, my motto is you say it with conviction and a straight face, and then you're going to cause confusion in the other person.
Yeah. I thought, you know what? I like that motto. I like that motto. It's great.
Go ahead, Mark. You're on a roll.
I am on a roll. Hey, man, looking at the Broncos, first off, the running game was awesome. They just resurrected the Green Bay Packers sweep, which was, and I had never seen, Joel, I don't know what you would call it. Like, at one point, they pull a front side guard, like a G lead type of play, and they pulled the center and the tackle on the backside and run sweep out of that. And I didn't know how to, like, you see stuff like this in college more than I would in the pros. I didn't know how to classify it. I didn't know what to call it. It was like a G lead front side with a counter kind of, like a center counter or a almost a power type of play. Like, do they run it in college? Have you seen that kind of play?
Yeah, I would categorize it as pin and pull, you know, just because I feel like it is essentially a pull sweep and it could be even a C-gap run or a D-gap, doesn't really matter, depending on the leverage of the end man on the line of scrimmage. And in college, you actually see this quite a bit because of the amount of shotgun run that you have and the fact that the linemen in college, the offensive linemen, a lot of times, they're not dominant players. It's hard to find offensive linemen. So college coaches try to use leverage and angles to the best of their ability. So essentially what pin and pull is, and you know this obviously, but I don't know if this is exactly what Denver was doing, but it seems to me like you come up with the concept. I don't know. Let's just say for the sake of argument, we call it 98 sweep. Okay. And so 98 sweep has a pull principle tied to it. And then what happens is if you're an uncovered lineman, you pull, just period. And if your inside gap is covered, then you just block back. So you pin or you pull. And if your front side gap is uncovered, then you can get out of there. So it could be the center. It could be the guard. It could be two guards. It could be the center and the tackle. It could be any guys pulling. And then the other guys, depending on the leverage of the defensive lineman, just block back. But Michigan ran this a lot 2 years ago. You see a few teams use this, in particular into the short side of the field is when you gain a lot of those leverage points. And so you see a lot of that pin and pull into the short side of the field in college for sure.
See any improvement in Drew Lock last week?
No, Drew, I think that Denver won in large part in spite of their quarterback. I think that the offensive line did a really, really nice job. And Mark, you're talking about the gap schemes, pulling schemes. I thought that they were really good. For instance, like on Melvin Gordon's run, I thought that was like the most important drive / touchdown, the score. You know, it's a close game. And it's the second half. And then all of a sudden Gordon pops a big run for a touchdown. And I'm rewinding it back and I'm looking at it and I'm like, is Miami misaligned or are they just dumb? And I'm sorry to say it that way, but I got to tell you that the defensive alignment was, curious to say it nicely. So I know that it's hard to do this over radio, but Mark, you can understand and Mike, follow along. Okay. So when you have a defensive front and you're going to play essentially a 4-man line of scrimmage, whether one of them is standing up or not, you have to shade correctly. The techniques have to align in order to be gap sound. Okay. So in large part, if one side of your offensive line is going to be like a one or a two eye technique, that means a one is on the outside eye or shoulder of the center. A two eye is the inside shoulder of the guard. Okay. So it doesn't really matter if you're a one or a two eye, you're the A gap player. Okay. And that's the nose guard or a defensive tackle. So they were playing that technique, a two-eye on the weak side of the offense, which means that the end man on the line of scrimmage, he was in a five technique on the outside shoulder of the tackle. The linebacker then is the B-gap player, okay, the B-gap being on the outside shoulder of the guard. Well, on the other side, here's what has to happen. You've got to bump out into at least a two, an even technique, head up on the guard or on the outside shoulder in a three technique in order to run an over front, because they had a nine technique, which is outside shoulder of the tight ends. Okay. So if you're following along here, what you're seeing is that Miami did not bump out. They ran a two eye on the strong side. So now the two defensive linemen are both A gap players. Now the strong side linebacker is the B-gap player, and they've got an in-man on the line of scrimmage, a nine technique. He's a D-gap player. There is an uncovered gap, which is the C-gap. If the safety doesn't come down and you don't close the middle of the field, right, rotate the safety has to come down, and he's got to be the C-gap player, or else there's just not a C-gap player. Well, sure enough, they run that little guard play where they just hand it to Gordon, and they block back. You've got unbelievable angles because the double team happening with the guard and the tackle can get all the way to the backside linebacker. The tight end just, he doesn't block the nine technique. He just walks up to the linebacker. He blocks him. And then the guard comes out and he just pulls and kicks out the nine or the in man on the line of scrimmage. And there is a gap, this, the size of Gunnison sitting there on the right side, and the safety doesn't step up. So I'm thinking to myself, like, well, one, that's great game planning by Denver, but what in the world is Miami doing? And good for Denver to exploit that, but I gotta tell you, I don't know what Brian Flores and the Miami Dolphins were doing. A lot of technical jargon. I hope you followed all of that. But basically, here's the deal. You cannot have two interior defensive linemen being the two inside techniques, right? You had two eyes, left the C gap totally uncovered. Broncos found it. They exploited it, and that was a huge touchdown.
Huge touchdown, and that's part of their almost an amoeba defense is what I call it. Like, nobody puts their hands down. They're all milling around, and they're trying to create confusion. In that particular instance, they create confusion for themselves. Let me ask you about Drew Lock, and we've talked about Drew Lock on the deep throws before, but just concerned that I always go back to a conversation I had with Bruce Arians about throwing a deep ball. He said there's four things that can happen. Three of them are good. You can complete it, you can get PI, you can get an incomplete pass, those are all good, or you can throw a pick. But if your quarterback throws it 8 yards over the guy who's wide open on a deep ball, none of those things can happen. Like, there's no chance of PI, there's no chance on a 50-50 ball of a receiver going up and getting it if it's 5 yards over his head. Like, what gives there, Joel? Because it happened at least five or six times.
Yeah, I think that's a severe lack of confidence and belief. A guy that is so afraid to make a mistake that he's going to hedge and throw it over the head of everybody, you know, and he's not trying to, but in his mind, he's like my guy or nobody. And that's not necessarily what you've got to do. The deep ball in today's football with the way that they call PI, I feel like should 95% of the time from a quarterback, you should always underthrow the deep ball. I know that sounds crazy, but with exactly what you were talking about, the reason you don't want to overthrow it is because, you know, it seems obvious, 100% of overthrown passes are incomplete. There's no chance, right? You didn't give anybody a chance to make a play. And then I think it stems from a lack of confidence. I think it stems from a little bit of timidness to make a mistake. I just don't want to be the guy that causes the problem. I don't want to read another article about how I made the mistake and threw an interception. And I think that can sit in the back of a quarterback's head, and he's got his kind of antennas up to criticism. And then because of that, you know, he starts overthrowing the ball in order to not make a mistake.
Busy with Joel Klatt. We had Adam Schefter on earlier. We were just talking about the state of quarterbacks in the AFC West, and he was raving about Justin Herbert. He in his mind, Justin Herbert is on a path that's almost Mahomes-like, and that the Broncos could be potentially screwed for the next 10 to 15 years in this division. Are you surprised by how well Herbert's playing? What were your views on him coming out of Oregon?
Yeah, I am surprised. I was not super high on Herbert coming out. I thought that he was, you know, I thought he was going to turn into what kind of Drew Lock is becoming in Denver, which was a guy that was really talented but didn't understand the NFL game. I thought that the offense that Oregon ran last year was pretty elementary. He used to stare down his first read. If he couldn't, you know, use his big arm, then he would take off. And I thought, boy, I don't see this translating, but, you know, huge kudos to him that he comes out. And I agree, by the way, with Schefter. He's been outstanding. I was dead wrong on Herbert, and he is clearly, I would say, the second best quarterback in the division. While the Chargers are not the second best team in the division, I think that he is better than Carr in Vegas, even though Carr is a pretty good quarterback. But I think that the frustrating part, and Mike, we talked about this, and it sounds like you were talking about it with Adam Schefter, divisions are run by the best quarterback in the division, period, right? Like, it is so rare that a team wins a division without the best quarterback in that division or the quarterback that plays the best that year. And Denver is not even just like by a little bit. They are in fourth position by a mile right now in that regard. And I think that's kind of what Adam was talking about, is that all of a sudden you've got these young quarterbacks, and two of them look like they're going to be around for a long time. And if you don't get that position figured out, then Denver is kind of relegated to hoping for a wild card spot for the next decade. And that's a tough position to be in. Now, we've seen teams win the Super Bowl as a wild card. Heck, I think the Broncos' first Super Bowl was a wild card. In fact, I know it was, because you guys went in the divisional round and beat Kansas City, who was the number one seed that year. But it's very rare to do so. You guys had the Duke. You had John Elway. You know, so I just feel like Denver's in a really precarious spot as far as the future goes, which is why I think it's fairly comical, this whole, like, well, is Drew the guy or is he not the guy? It's like, guys, just look around the division. It's so clear Drew Locke is not the guy. You got to move on.
Well, here would be my question, and I think you probably just answered it, but your experience watching these quarterbacks, and we're all wrong a time or two about a guy, you know, that comes into the league. And I've always said this, there's sometimes, like, you get into the National Football League and it just makes sense to you. Like, oh, this is, I'm a much better professional player than I was a collegiate player. And, you know, I think I was a better professional player than I was a collegiate player. So, it just makes sense. With that said, in the next six or seven games, can Drew Locke ascend to the point where he's not the worst quarterback in the division? Or do you think he just, that's where he's at and there's no climbing out of that hole?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough climb for me. I mean, he would have to drastically change his performance, and it's a performance that we see pretty consistently, right? You know, I mean, Mark, I gotta be honest, like, it's not like we see these games where it's like, that's it. That's how you play the position. It's always like, well, okay, good. The Broncos won and they did it because they ran the football well and the defense played outstanding. You know, I just don't see it. We don't see, like, it's pretty clear, regardless of if the Chargers are winning or not, it's very clear that Justin Herbert is going to be an outstanding player at quarterback. He pops. He does things really well. He makes huge throws, confident throws. The ball goes to the right spot. It goes there on time and on target. Drew, like, I mean, isn't it shame on us if we're sitting there and still being like, well, I don't know. It's like, it's pretty clear. It's pretty clear to me. Maybe it's not clear to other people. I'm not sure. But maybe it stems from just the difficulty of trying to find or land that type of player in the NFL draft. I think that that's also a point of this. Maybe it's free agency that you got to go do this with. Maybe it's a trade. I'm not sure. Is there a way you can go get, I don't know. I think Sam Darnold is better than Drew Locke. You've got five, maybe six guys, maybe seven guys in this year's NFL draft that you could potentially rate in the first round. I'm not sure every one of them will go in the first round, but, you know, you've got the top two, Lawrence and Fields. You're going to have a guy like Trey Lance at North Dakota State. You're going to have a guy like Zach Wilson at BYU that people are going to look at. Kyle Trask at Florida. You got Mac Jones at Alabama. You got Brock Purdy at Iowa State. All these guys at least deserve some consideration in terms of a look. So it's, to me, it's pretty clear, Mark, and I think it's probably shame on us if we can consistently sit here, watch the same performance with no improvement, and say, well, maybe next time.
Visiting with Joel Klatt, lead college football analyst for Fox Sports. College football playoff rankings, top four, Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State. Did they get it right?
Well, no, but you know, it's not their fault, right? Like, the committee is tasked with something that's fairly impossible. We have no standard or set criteria, and they just kind of they throw it against, well, listen, I can play blindfolded darts as well. So, you know, like, if they wanted me to, if they want me to jump on a Zoom and play blindfolded darts, I can do that as well. I just don't quite get it. I mean, listen, Georgia in the top 10 as a two-loss team is pretty comical. They had two quality opponents that they played and got absolutely drilled by both of them. The rest of, you know, their wins come against a combined teams that are a combined 15 and 22, and yet they're in the top 10. I don't quite get that. I think that it's a big nod to their recruiting and their potential. I think Clemson over Ohio State doesn't make much sense to me. I mean, you can say, like, well, Ohio State didn't look great against Indiana. Well, it's an Indiana team that is, one, really good. Their quarterback is outstanding. They've got one of the best wide receivers in the country. And Ohio State, yeah, gave up 35 points and a lot of passing yards, but they're still undefeated, whereas Clemson in their last two ball games beat Boston College by 6 and lost, then hasn't played since, and we just rank them above Ohio State. It's like, for what? Like, well, I'm sorry, what's – I just don't get it, right? Like, I don't understand the conversations. We have these 13 people in there that I don't get it, man. And it's frustrating. People are always like, well, that's all you do is complain about the playoff rankings. Well, I complain because it's such a flawed system. It's a sport that I love, and we use this stupid system to rank teams. I don't understand it. Think of it this way, right? If you have a math mind at all, and you look at an equation that has 13 variables, each of those variables are going to have a much higher statistical variance than an equation with thousands of variables, right? Meaning that if you change one of the votes, the equations in a 13 variable equation, it's going to change the answer pretty drastically compared to an equation with thousands of variables. Why don't we have more inputs into this equation? See, the BCS system was actually really good. We just only included two teams at the end. So it wasn't necessarily how we rank teams. It was what we did with those rankings. Then we threw all of it out, baby and bathwater, and tried to come up with something just to include more teams. But then we watered down the equation with these 13 people in a room, half of which really don't know what they're watching when they're watching game film. I just don't get it. And it's frustrating because I love the sport, and it's become such a beauty contest. We reward potential and recruiting over what we actually see on the field. And if I was a team like Ohio State or BYU, by the way, ranked 14th, I would be livid because that's the future of your program. That's what you're trying to go out there and do. And these 13 people go in there and tell you, well, you're not as good as this other team that's lost games. I just don't understand.
You got me on equations, man. I was like, I was trying to come up with like E equals MC squared or something really smart, but he crushed me on that. Hey, Joshua Fields, in that game, throwing a couple interceptions.
That'd be Justin Fields.
Oh, yeah, okay. Whatever his name is. Justin Fields, throwing a couple.
He's a college player, Mike.
Yeah, I know.
But I actually watched Joel in that game.
I watched Joel Fields.
I watched Joel. He was great in that game. I don't really watch it for the college. Well, I just watch it to listen to Joel. Joel's our friend. I was like, hey, Joel's on. I'm going to watch the game. So, okay, you want to be all technical. What was his name again?
Justin
Fields. Justin Fields. Surprised he threw the interception? Does it change your mind at all about Justin Fields and his potential going forward in the NFL?
No, I mean, it was clearly his worst game. I thought one of the interceptions was just like a really bad throw. And then the other two were just horrendous decisions by him. And two of which, you know, he's trying to throw the ball out of bounds and throw it away. And he just starts getting tackled and it kind of flutters out of his hands. I don't know if there's much you can do about that as a quarterback. One of the other ones he's again in the grasp of a defender and tries to kind of throw it to one of their wide receivers across the middle. It floats. It gets picked. I still really like Fields and his game. I think that game Saturday is going to give people a lot of pause, because he did not look good. And I felt like for the first time you saw a guy that was trying, he was pressing to be perfect as if the Heisman Trophy was in the back of his mind. And when you play that way, you're going to make mistakes. So I'm really eager. I have them again this week. I've got to go to Champaign, Urbana, Illinois and watch Ohio State. Illinois, so that one should be close. But I'm eager to see how he plays this week in response to that. And I think that will show scouts and show me, quite frankly, a lot more about what his potential is rather than just that game. He still threw for over 300 yards. He still was very efficient. He was incredibly athletic. He pulled a couple of moves and runs that were outstanding and was a big reason why they were able to win that football game. But yeah, those mistakes are troublesome to some degree.
Big Lebowski, the best movie ever made, huh?
I mean, that's pretty clear to me. I don't know what anyone. Good Night, Sweet Prince. I just feel like that's such a good movie, and it gets better. Like it's one of those movies that it's good the first time, it's better the second time, and then by the time you watch it 20 times, you're like, well, that's clearly the best movie I've ever seen.
The Dude in Binds.
Yeah.
All right, Joel. Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you and that beautiful family of yours. And thank you for everything you do for us. And have a great call this week. We'll talk to you next week.
Happy Thanksgiving to all of you, excluding the 8 a.m. texters. We all know how we feel about that.
That's right.
And, you know, yeah, like, hey, man, there's a beverage here, man. Relax.
See you, Joel.
Later.
Later.
Joel Klatt.
Classic.
Presented by Audi Flatirons.